Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, August 5th. Today's session is Building Bridges, Ministering to the Hispanic Community. Meet the Hispanic Latino Communities. Who are we? Presented by Luz Maria Cabrera. The number of the tape is 2002-01. Let's listen in.
Story. That's it. Happened to me like 6 or 7 years ago. I was attending a conference there in the University of Texas. The professor was a sociologist, Mexican-American or Chicano, as they call themselves. And he was telling us the story how the Irish and Italians, immigrants, when they arrived here in the United States at more than 100 years ago, they were not accepted by the whole white community. They were labeled like violent, lazy, Catholics, so and so. And that's why they were not really accepted. They were outside of the community. But he said as soon as the African-American and other groups of color weren't growing up in the United States, then the white community closed the wagon circle, except this group, because they weren't growing and weren't established, and also they weren't having more well-being of living, etc. And they weren't accepted by the white community as a way to fight or to avoid the growing power of the black community. He said, I bet you that in 20 years, your children or your grandchildren will see, as the Hispanic community is growing up, that we all become white. Mm-hmm. And we laughed, everybody was there. We are all going Hispanic, and we really did a good laugh of that. 2 years ago, when I was filling some papers there in the immigration office, as I was checking those spaces where, say, your race and you, I was surprised that there was no those little square for Hispanics. And I went to ask the official, well, what's happening with this? I mean, my first thought was maybe we disappear or what? Mm. And they would ask me, so, well, you have to check white. What? Yes, the Hispanics are white. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's not supposed to happen 20 years from now, but no. That's for me a big surprise. I was expecting my children become white, not myself. But a couple of months later, this came to the public, the new census data. Where it say that the Hispanics have grown even more than the African American, and now we are the largest group, ethnic group or minority group in the United States. I said, that's why now we are white, because we are right now growing up, and then we are getting more political and economical power. And this 2000 census reveals that the Hispanic population now has reached the 35.3 million of people. That's equal 30% of the population. Mm-hmm. And a prediction that's supposed to happen in the year 2007, it is happening right now. And now you have Hispanics all over the United States in places where it's not traditionally seen, like Minnesota, when this was difficult for us to think that they were Hispanics. We always thought, well, Hispanics are concentrated in Texas and California, New Mexico, but now they are all over the United States. And that is having bring a big shock in all the communities. Schools, they are we are getting a lot of Hispanic children. We are not prepared to teach them. And also, all the hospitals and all the workplaces, they are always in the search of Hispanic, bilingual personnel to help them with the Hispanic. That's increased when on 1999, we were 22.4%. 4 million of people. But now we are this, doesn't mean that we have an increase of 58% in just 10 years. That's a really, really large increase of less than 10 years. And that is, of this 58%, of this 35 million, 12 of us, we are Mexicans. We are the majority among the Hispanics. But what it is says of the, even there is a shaking of the whole society, it's also shaking the churches. The churches, they were not prepared for this avalanche of Hispanic. Even those churches that have been traditionally doing Hispanic ministries, when they learn about that suddenly advance of the Hispanic, everybody start running here and there, trying to find personnel for their churches. We can see that in our seminary that we are preparing lay pastors. They had churches coming to ask us, do you have some pastor for our church? Well, we're just starting the program. We have this program began 6 months ago. They are not ready, that program last 2 years. It doesn't matter. When church told us, it doesn't matter, we take it as is. I'm sorry, but he's not ready to work. We are not just preparing people and giving like this. He needs to finish his program. And there is something, the same thing is happening with the LCA. Let me tell you that what is happening with the LCA. And LCA, when the LCA merged from that different synod, formed the, what we also actually know, that the LCA, they set a goal. It said in 10 years from now, we are going to have among our membership 20% of people of color. That was on the merge. What happened 12 years ago, more or less?
Yeah.
Well, 10 years we are going to have. At that time, they had just 2.5% of people of color membership.
2.5.
The goal was the 20% in 10 years. Those 10 years passed, and those numbers are still the same. Mm-hmm. 2.5%.
Of all people of color.
Of all people of color. Those things. That was making the our LCA authorities and people in Chicago change and say, well, why we don't, from now, give to the Hispanic the power and the ability and responsibility to do their own strategies and planning for the future. And that way, if you are going to blame somebody, blame themselves for their own lack of growing. And that way, they call a team, a group of people to do the strategy for the Hispanic ministry. I was one of those eight that was summoned to do. I am a lay person, but what I brought to this group, to this team, to that to say, sit down to write the strategies was my own reflection and my own experience as helping my husband, who has been a mission developer for the LCA for the last 10 years that we arrived here into the United States. And also later I was hired as a co-developer to work together and develop a mission. And also I was a member later, a chairperson of a Border Area Ministry Council with it was a cluster of eight synods along the Mexican border. And then that gave him the opportunity to travel and visit a lot of churches in all of the United States and Puerto Rico. It also brought my experience in working in Latin America churches for 20 years. And I put together all this experience and reflection into this strategic team. It does later when I went to work with the People's Seminary, I put all together in that was this course board. Let me tell you something that I always tell the people when I, especially when I teach to the Lutherans, I always do analysis because they're always saying, what do you do? Where are you critic to the church? I am not critic of the church. I am analytic. I am doing analysis. In doing analysis, sometimes you are getting the reality and putting in front of you. And sometimes that reality shock us or we don't like. But how am I going to create something that I love so much? But I want that this church that I love so much live and live forever. And that way, when I went to the strategic team, the first thing that I tell them, let me tell you, though, I was there, I was someone like for the lay people's side, because I was the only lay, all of them were first. The first thing that I told them, that they didn't like it, but then later they accept that the Hispanic ministries are ministries of transition. They are not ministries forever. I told them you have to change the view that the Hispanic ministry are being here, that are set here as a block and being forever. Those are ministries of transition. That means me and time the people speak Spanish, we are going to have Hispanic ministry. But as long as this is changing and our children learn English and our grandchildren start forgetting Spanish, we have to move ahead. Because you know, we are going to become an ethnic church. If we are already an ethnic church, if we don't want to have within our church, other ethnic group close, that we don't be on the future, our children, they don't feel related. They don't feel related because they are going to become more and more Americans. Mm-hmm. They will become more and more an ethnic group. And then what's happened that the ESA and other mainstream churches, that is not something that is happening, but it's happened the same, like a photocopy with the Presbyterian Church. They say the same goals, that's happening the same thing with the Methodist Presbyterian. The Episcopals are doing better than the Baptists also, but that we have here the LCA. They say, well, we're going to have our Hispanic ministries like a satellite. Mm-hmm. And we have always been here. Mm-hmm. I was telling them, if we have here thinking like this, like an egg, you think like this, an spermatozoid. This is spermatozoid is trying to get in. That's what we are doing, trying to get to get in. If we sometimes all of this to get in, then we are going to have the deep baby that it will become the new church, the multicultural church that we both groups are willing to have. But meantime, we are just activities here. If this is getting close and close, this is going to become rotten, like a rotten egg. And it is going to die because it cannot, if we are both dying together.
Are you talking, I'm sorry, I missed the first, the beginning, but like, were you speaking of all the different Lutheran churches, like Missouri Synod Lutheran Church? You depicted the same picture that you have in ELCA with Missouri Synod, because our mission program is, you know, I used to go down to Lutheran Border Concerns Ministry, and we would do missionary work in Mexico, and we're not getting any money anymore from the Synod. They're not supporting any outside mission programs. So it's going to be very hard to keep our mission programs going in Mexico and Guatemala and all these places because they don't support us anymore.
Right, and then the session 3 and 4, we are going to talk about strategies.
Oh.
And how this thing is happening, you know, just in Missouri Synod, but in all the mainstream churches.
Uh-huh.
And then we have seen that why that 2.5% it doesn't grow because of the lack of strategic ambition. And they don't have this also a vision of how we can. They are always thinking that the Hispanic ministry is something that is happening outside of the mainstream church, outside of the main groups. And that is why we are also keeping us the small groups.
But don't you think also that people tend to not think of the Hispanic or Latino community as a diverse community because it's culturally diverse and it is economically diverse in the United States. I mean, there's unacculturated, partially acculturated, and fully acculturated Latino community. And so I think people tend to think of it as in one sector, not to think of it in an inclusive way.
Right. Uh-huh. And then also we are lost in our vision of mission. We don't see that groups are a part of a mission field. And we are almost forgetting what mission is for. What is the first call of the church? To be witnesses and to do mission among all the world. Well, that's something for later. Okay, let's just go to starting our first session. Let's say, whom are we? The Hispanics, because we are not all the same. I mean, subsequently, all Hispanics are putting all in the same bag, and we are quite different. But let me tell the first thing that people ask me, the correctly a political way to address us, are you, what is better, Hispanic or Latino? I don't know how to call you. Well, let me tell you something. We don't know how to call you either. It's the first thing that we don't know how to address you. Because I want to tell you a secret that I tell to a few people. In Mexico, if you attend a school in Mexico, since Mexico until Argentina, always in the schools, they teach us not to call you Americans. Because they tell us, if you call them Americans, then you are surrounding all the continent to them, because we are also Americans. And then we are giving up our countries. Don't never call them Americans. That's why we never call you Americans. If you see when we are watching the Hispanic TV, the person that says, sometimes the president is addressing the nation, is somebody else translating. When the president say, "We Americans," the translator say, another thing. He said, "We people of the United States," never say "we Americans." And that way we are invented a lot of different names for you. You know that in Mexico, everybody calls you gringos. That is a word that came from the war between Mexico and the United States. The uniform was green, of the soldiers was green, and then they put green, go, right, they put it together, that mean gringo. And that's because the years become a more a friendly expression. Now there you can see sometimes in the walls in Mexico an expression that say, "Gringos go home, gringas come on." Like a way of accepting the, it's more like acceptance. In Texas, the people call you bolillos. Bolillo is the Mexican, the French bread that we make in Mexico, we call the French bread bolillo. They know that it's white by inside, the gold for outside. And there is a stereotype that everybody, Hispanic, think that you all are blonde. In LA, they call you gabachos. I don't know what that word means, maybe Juan knows, I don't know. There is invention there. But anyhow, we also accept to be called Latinos or Hispanic. It doesn't matter for us. I mean, Latinos is more accepted among the people in the West Coast because they are more related to Latin America. But the people of the East Coast, especially the Cubans, they are more, they like better Hispanics because they are more descended of Spaniards. But anyhow, both is for us accepted. Now, the main groups among us, and the first one are the Chicanos. Chicano is more a, it has an apolitical, it has a political meaning, not just a group, but it has an apolitical meaning. The Chicanos are those that they are not immigrants. They didn't come to the United States. The United States came to them. When the invasion of that part of Mexico, they were living there, and they remained there. If their way to fight against this invasion was to preserve their culture and their tradition. And still now, more than 200 years, they still speak Spanish. And they still eat tortillas and chili. And they have their own Spanish. It's a different Spanish, an old Spanish. Sometimes we don't understand each other, but we are able to communicate with them. But they feel more protected of the new immigrants than we feel related to them. But those Chicanos are those that you can see in the political arena, or those people that are doing better in this society. But also they are having that strong feeling that they are in a special group. The second group that maybe you don't know are the Pochos. We were talking with Juan about the Pochos. The Pochos is a group that, as he gave us a definition, nobody liked it. Nobody accepted. The Mexicans, they don't accept the Pochos, and the Americans, they don't accept the Pochos either. The Pochos are the children of the immigrants, the first generation of the Mexicans immigrants.
Can you spell that? Because I'm not understanding it.
Right.
P-O-C-H-O-S.
Okay.
P-O-C-H-O-S.
Pochos. That's something that we, just the Mexicans, know. But it's important that you know, because these pochos as people that they want to belong to this society, but they are not accepted. They have not been accepted by this society because they are different, because they speak different and belong to an ethnic, a specific ethnic group. This is the people that that are struggling, and they go more easily into trouble because they're willing to be accepted. And then they've been rejected. They are really rebellious against this society, and also rebellious against their own ethnic group. But later, when they grow and they start finding their ways in this society, they become more and more integrated to the Hispanic culture. Let me tell you something that anticipates something with the Chicanos. When the churches start thinking and doing a Hispanic ministry, the first thing that they do is to think in the Chicanos. Because, well, they have been here for years, they speak English, and they are succeed economically. I remember when we arrived in Houston and we began working in this mission, Hispanic mission, the first thing that our authorities at that time told us, no, forget those groups what you are working with. Go and reach out this group, the Chicanos. And they're always, when we start a mission, there are always people that tell, oh, you know, I have a neighbor who, I think so, his name is Pedro. Why you didn't invite, I got to tell him to go to. Oh, I have a co-worker, she is, her name is Rodriguez Garcia. I think so, it's a good idea. Oh, some pastor even have told us, there are two Hispanics in our congregation. You can invite them to your new mission. They can help you. What happened to those are Chicanos. Ellos, we are always telling the pastor, you have to reach them because they are more cultural, integrated to this society. They don't longer speak a good Spanish. Hispanic ministry is for the people that just speak Spanish, not for those that they can speak English. Those are able to speak English, you have to reach them. You have to go to them. No, it's not our duty to bring them. Because if we don't have opened the church for the Hispanics, their children will know that you weren't close. If when their children become more and more Americans, and you try to reach out to them, you say, oh, well, they are now more American. They have a social memory. Mm-hmm. And they will remember, they rejected my parents because my parents were poor, because my parents didn't speak English well enough. That's why you say we are ministries in transitions to go to the main church. But we have to have that in mind if when we are planning to do that expansion. Don't reach out. If they are coming without their well accept, but they won't come. They won't. And our children, they'll become like Chicanos, in our grandchildren too. And that's why we want to take them to the Lutheran church, not to the Hispanic Lutheran Church. To the, you have to have in mind that we are part of the Lutheran Church. That we have the, what is different about us is that we speak Spanish, but we are Lutheran. I have been Lutheran for 32 years. Mm-hmm. My husband grew up in the Lutheran Church. He was like 7 years old when he became a Lutheran. We are not quite different.
I want to make sure that I'm clear, because I'm not sure I'm understanding exactly. You're saying that the ELCA, for example, the church body, must accept Latinos, Spanish-speaking people, have a way to welcome them assume a white congregation, to welcome them into a white congregation and integrate them from the start, so that as things move on and generations go on, the children will know that they were welcomed there, that their parents who didn't even speak English were welcomed there, and then they would come to the
right.
To the Lutheran Church.
And the strategy, you will see that we have different ways to have different forms or different ministries, but always relate. That's from my point of view. Mm-hmm. Always will be related to a English congregation.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's a way to see that, like their own church. Not to see who, Lutheran. What? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the second category. Our children that are truly struggling within this society. Now we have the new immigrants, are coming from all Latin America, mostly from Mexico. In these new immigrants, we have that they are coming to the rural area and the urban area. These people that's coming to the rural area, which are the majority, they have a high, particularity is that they have a high mobility. It's so difficult because sometimes they are working here and they move up to the north and they come back to California. They're working on the seasons. I mean, the crops are here and the seasonal crops, and they are harvesting here and there, and they are moving all around. That's the characteristic where the work is, they go up there. But anyhow, we are having now ministries for them. And then we have an example in our community there in Washington, that we have this Hispanic ministry, thinking that these people that are moving forth and back. And then we have the rural ministries. There is also other one in Oregon. The Lutheran Church has another one that's also growing up with this. The particularity of this group is that also the majority of them are indigenous, coming from Mexico. And sometimes they don't speak Spanish. And then we are having a little bit of difficulties to communicate with them. But the urban Hispanic, they are people that are moving from this to this section. I mean, they are.
Can I ask then, where would you put Puerto Ricans? Or are they not? I mean, I know they're not immigrants, but that would be part of the Hispanic community, would it?
Right, they are part of the Hispanic community. Among the Hispanics, as I was telling, they have different groups that are the. I was explaining at the beginning that of the majority of the Hispanics here in the United States are Mexicans. Is it 12.5 million something? Is almost half of the Hispanic population, like 40% of the Hispanic population. And there are coming to groups that are smaller, like the Puerto Ricans, the South Americans. There are also a large group of South American people that it's difficult to recognize the South Americans because they are pretty white and blue eyes and blonde people, and then they blend easily among the people in the United States, but Puerto Rico, they are certainly more in New York. Yes, of course, they are Hispanics, but they have a different status. They are not having the same fight that we have as when they with legal issues. They don't, because they are citizens. And as when we have an Hispanic ministry, as we as Hispanic, as Hispanics, we always have in mind also an ethnic issue. We feel really identified, all those with all that have or not have papers. We never call them illegals because we don't feel well calling illegal them. We have people that have no papers. Even so, the Chicanos that have been here for more than 200 years, they weren't the ones that defeat this governor in California, this infamous Pete Wilson, that was really having harsh laws against the Hispanics. The Chicanos, they close lines with them. Those all, if we have always in mind that what we call an ethnic issue among us, that is the fight for papers for all the immigrants, or recognition. And later on, in the next session, I'm going to talk about the all the inputs that we are bringing to this society that they are not recognized by the society, then we feel that that we are being exploited and, because we have no, the society is not recognizing what we are bringing to it. Why do we leave our countries? Well, sometimes there are people, well, because the Latin American countries are poor, and then the poverty is making you to live out. Well, that is a small truth. The real truth is that we leave our countries when we lost hope. When we see that there are nothing else there. When we see that we are changing presidents and we are changing the government. If everything remains the same, and when we start low, then we have just two ways to go. One is to go into revolution. That's why we are having had too many civil wars in all Latin America. If the other one is to go someplace where the propaganda is inviting us to come. Yeah. We don't, when we watch TV, we always watched programs coming from the United States. We have all the main stores that you have here, Walmart, McDonald's, everything there is there. And when we don't have any hope to do better in our countries, and when we see that our children have no future, and we saw all the propaganda, that way the people is walking over here. That's why they are dying on the desert or crossing the mountain. Not because they think that here is a promised land, but they know that there is nothing left for them. Or we go into fight and then we are to die. Or we walk into the desert where we are going to die. But maybe we can do better for our children. Always is the hope. When you ask the immigrant, why are you here? Because I hope that my children have a future. Because I came here for me. Because you think of ourselves. If somebody takes you, putting you in middle of the China, let's tell China. You have your circle of relationship. Here, there's your circle of relationship. You have, in this circle, you have your family. You have your relatives, your friends, your co-workers, your church, your physician, your dentist, your clubs. You are here, you are the center here. If somebody's taking you from here, you're putting here, you here in the middle of China, don't you have to rebuild all these relationships? You say, I better go back, say, visit China, but I go back to my place. And we are coming to this situation when we don't speak the language. Sometimes the people are asking me, well, what happened with the Hispanic that they don't, why they don't learn English? A friend of mine who is, he was a missionary there in Latin America for too many years. He was asking me, I know him that he was not trying to be meaning because he was curious. He said, I know Hispanics have been here for 10 years, 10, 20 years, they don't speak any English. The English is speak by here. He did it with his hand, speak by here. Why? If he was telling by himself, when I went to Guatemala, he lived in Guatemala, I was fluent in less than 2 years. But I told him, well, remember that you live there with a Guatemalan family. When you Americans go there, you can do your life as a professional guest. Mm-hmm. Because everybody invites you to their houses, to their parties, to their lives. When we arrive here, nobody invites us to their house. Nobody speaks us. To learn English is like to learn to play piano. You need the theory, but you need the practice. It's discouraging or frustrating when I know a lot of young people say, I have been a year trying to learn English, but I don't know why I don't pass to the next session. Because they don't have the practice. In Houston, in our first congregation, a young woman was there. We got an invitation to a wedding. I didn't want to make a mistake. I asked this young lady in our congregation. She came to the United States when she was 4 years old. At that time, she was like 25. What the people here, they usually do in a wedding? Well, she told me, I don't know. I have never been in a wedding of any American or any white people. Furthermore, she told me, I have never been in one of their houses. Nobody have invited me ever to their houses. I don't know how. That's why there is keeping us having these Hispanic ministries like an accession separate from the other church, from the main church. That's, we're willing to learn English.
This is so interesting because in Yakima we have a Hispanic ministry, and so we did invite the pastor and to come up to Spokane, and I was in the hotel business, so I gave them a room to stay in and some things to take back. And so I know this situation. Sometimes we feel like if they don't speak English, they probably won't enjoy coming to the house because we can't communicate very well. And so it's kind of like we want to be in relationship, but we have that same feeling that they would be uncomfortable. And so, and I know down in Mexico, when we do missionary work down there, I go into the homes and I don't know any Spanish. I mean, just very, very little. And we just talk through shaking hands and just motions, and then we can have a small type of relationship.
Right, is that like a way of not taking this personal? Is that like a way of telling the society?
Yeah.
As a society that is closing among themselves, leaving us out. For example, in Houston, where we lived when we arrived here, we were in like in a ghetto. We were living all around us, all were in Hispanic. The store, the Hispanic store, the newspaper in Spanish, the television in Spanish. Nobody had a chance there to speak English. Nobody. I don't remember to ever saw an American, a white person walking in the neighborhood. They weren't scared to come, to get in, to walk over. As a matter of fact, even so that we are Chicano, so we are first immigrant generation, or Pochos, or Puerto Ricans, South America, as this situation is like is, we feel that we are live in exile. That's what we are feeling, that we are in exile because the society is not embracing us. And what we can say about the churches? Are the churches embracing us? Are we being accepting the mainstream churches, or we are like opening our space, like pushing them and showing to get in? What do you think?
Is the point? Is the point to have people come to the United States and have them speak, learn the language, English, and then lose that flavor, that wonderful, rich tradition of theirs? When you're talking about do the churches assimilate the people that come, often I'll see a church with a name that's obviously Spanish-speaking church. And so we have the house of worship that they can hear the tongue, that they understand. Is the point that we don't want to get everybody to speak English, do we?
Well, you know, I think that's an interesting question, and I think part of it is that we all forget, at least I can speak to this in a different way, because I'm the grandson of immigrants who came to the United States, and very much where your story didn't speak English when they came.
Yeah, but how many,
I'm sorry?
No, I was just going to say, how many Hispanics that come from Mexico have to speak to the strawberries or the potatoes in English? They don't talk back, and the jobs they get, they don't have to talk English to. So that's why they don't learn English.
Yeah, no, but I mean, exactly. But I mean, I think first of all, those of us who are here have to understand that part of what we are today is made up of people that came from another country and didn't speak English and had a very rich cultural tradition. And I think we can look to ourselves and identify and connect with the Latino community who's coming from the United States, who very much is experiencing the same things that our families experienced 100 years ago when they came. But at the same time, hopefully we can look at being more inclusive and being more aware than people were 100 years ago. Because I know my father even tells me stories about when he was going to school and how they spoke with a strong accent and how they were not accepted as, and even though we were Swedish, but they weren't accepted as well in school because they spoke with an accent. So.
Another thing that is important, that what I am proposing is not an assimilation, but an integration, which is quite different. Yeah. When we integrate, we are bringing what we are, you know, in assimilating this, we are accepting all that is offering to us. Mm-hmm. But we are also have a rich culture to bring in. And also, in learning English, it doesn't mean that we are learning, that we are giving up our culture and our tradition, but it's keeping our culture and our tradition. It's not just the language, it's who we are and how our community is really tied to each other, how we are keeping, even though that example are the Chicanos that they have. I mean, may I time the other immigrant group have lost their language and culture and tradition, they still keep alive that. They still speak Spanish. It's amazing for me to see.
I'm from Minnesota, and on Wednesday mornings for the past 10 years, one of the things that I do is teach a class that's in Spanish and English, and it's for parents with preschool children. And many of the families that I've gotten to know, we've participated in their First Communions or things like this, but I find on Sunday morning that is the most segregated time of the whole week. And so I'm trying to picture what would be this integrated church, and I think of certain obvious things just based on classroom experience. You'd want to have interpreters, you'd want to have you know, anything that could be welcome. You'd want to have hymns in English and in Spanish. What are some of the other pieces that you would see that would be practical sorts of welcoming kinds of things?
Well, that is the part of the strategies, and then I'm going to present in the third session the different ministries that we have, that actually we have in the churches, those that are working better than the others, how they can connect these two churches or those two groups that are in the same church. There are many ways to connect.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the population in our community is mostly Chicano. And I noticed that the Episcopal Church and one Roman Catholic Church have offered a service in Spanish. And I asked them, you know, so how is that going? And they say, oh, nobody's coming. I don't know why not. but when I was working on another project, interdenominational project, and I went to the Pentecostal Church, here's where we all are. No songs in English. I mean, no songs in Spanish, rather. But it was, everybody was just together. And I have yet to interview the council there to see, well, how did you do that? But I, you know, I'm a, so they're doing it. And I have some guesses about how that's happening. But
I was this
the door-to-door visiting that you were doing, I'm wondering.
Yeah, I got to end this session with this, but to think about, I was reading an article right now that from a Catholic priest that they are lost in, like I said, our parentheses, the Catholics, even here in the United States and Latin America, the Catholics are leaving the Catholic Church to walk into the Pentecostal Church.
Mm-hmm.
And they see this phenomenon. He explained that, saying that the Pentecostals, they born among the poor, and they target the poor. And you have to remember that the poorest here in the United States are the Hispanics. And that's something that we have to think when we talk about the Lutheran Church and their long walk just with the middle and upper class, how is, for me, that's a point more difficult. More than the language and ethnic barrier that we have, is that we have to learn how to work with the poor. And we don't have a strategy, we don't have a vision, we don't have nothing in place.
There's so much fear, and the people just don't know.
Okay, now it is, so there is time to finish this.
Can I ask some flyers about People's Seminary and assignment fee if anyone wants?